I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Kate here. Welcome back to The Drop-In. I've just spent a bit of the morning listening back to some of my favourite clips from today's episode, and now I'm heading out for my coffee. I think this is going to be one you're really going to enjoy. First of all, just wanted to say thank you so much to all the St. Louis fans who got in touch after Lutz joined us last month. We love having you with us. Thanks for all the messages. Now for this one, well, Champions League returns next week, and the voice of today's guest is associated with some of the greatest nights in European football. If you think of the voice of this man, you might associate it with the opening goal of the 2010 World Cup, Roma's comeback against Barcelona in the 2018 Champions League, or maybe the 2022 World Cup final. Yes, I'm joined by Peter Drury, known by many people as the poet of football commentary because of the beauty of some of his phrases. We wanted to sit down with him and talk about some of his most treasured moments in football, his feelings about the new format of the Champions League, given that he's someone who really relishes the unpredictability of football. And first of all, to ask, because who better to speak to about this, what exactly is the point of a football commentator?
Rodri, he's giving it away to Højbjerg, and here's Kane! He sits on Tottenham's loftiest perch, beyond even the great Greaves. Spurs' most lavish scorer of all time. He has dared, and he has done. 267 and 200 in the Premier League.
It's a very pertinent question, and there'd be plenty who say there isn't one. And very often I'm inclined to agree with them, because especially if you commentate on big games, and sometimes I'm fortunate enough to do that, there's not a great deal you can tell people that they don't already know. And, you know, when you make your first steps into television, certainly from radio, the golden rule in theory about television commentary is that you shouldn't speak unless you can add to the picture. And if you take that to its ultimate, truth be told, you'd never speak at all. Except, I suppose, if you want me to justify my existence, which I struggle to do, I think it's possibly to reflect back at the viewer, the fan, the way he or she is feeling about the game, somehow to articulate the narrative, to understand the narrative, and to sort of voice it.
Because one of the things that you're really well known for doing is grasping those moments. People, all these mad people on the internet, fans of yours, put together these endless compilations of all of your personal biggest moments, even though it might be Messi scoring a wonder goal, but it's the Peter Drury moment. So it seems to me that one of the things you're doing is quite dramatic, and it's maybe more dramatic than many commentators working today. Is that how you see it?
Well, it seems to be that way. I don't live in the world of social media, so I don't often see this stuff, and it's much healthier that way. I suppose I do like the moment. I love language and I love football, and it's just the way it comes out. It's not something I seek to do genuinely. It's not a kind of this is a style that I'm going to go with. It's just the way I feel, and I'm excited by it, and it thrills me, and that's kind of how I express myself. It's the whole thing is utterly accidental, if that is what people approve of, that's lovely, and if that's what people don't approve of, well, I understand that. Why should they? It is just sort of what happens when I get excited. You wouldn't want to sit next to me at a game. People say, you know, do you set out to have a style or whatever? And I honestly don't, because I think that would be inauthentic.
So you're not someone who's sitting there jotting down little lines as you go about your daily business?
No, absolutely not. No, I mean, listen, I prepare a game like everybody else does. And I never script a line for a game. The goal, you'd be crazy to write anything for anything that happens between the kickoff and the final whistle, because that's, you know, you're predicting the unpredictable. That's silly. And if you try to imagine what you would say in the scoring of a goal, then that goal won't happen in the way you pre-imagined it. And whilst your words might be broadly somewhere around the occasion, you'll find when you reflect on it that you haven't quite been in the moment.
So talking about being in the moment then, this is years and years of practice is effectively what you're speaking to, Peter. This is how you're able to, first of all, be brave with your pause, right? Because lots of people, as you've already mentioned, might come out with too many words, whereas often you let the pictures breathe a lot more than that. And that, again, is something from confidence, would you say, from the years that you've put in?
Yeah, because honestly, that didn't used to be the case. Of me, I know, and you know, we all develop, don't we, over time, and the urge, I think, especially when you're young and over eager and very nervous, is to exhibit what you've got, and so it all comes splurging out when the ball hits the net, unless it's a really special statistic and absolutely, you know, forever, you know, the greatest ever or whatever. All anyone cares about is that their team has scored or their team has conceded. That's all that matters in the moment. It's a goal. It's a goal is all that matters. And then I think once it's all died down, you can say, and that was the goal that made Harry Kane one shy of Jimmy Greaves, or that was the goal that means, you know, whatever, you know, one of those sorts of things. But I think in the moment of the goal, all that matters is the goal.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Do you feel like people then use that sometimes as a replacement for experience?
Well, no. I mean, stats have a place. Stats have a place. They're absolutely valid. But I think we have, as a kind of football watching public, and certainly as a football watching media, possibly become slightly too stats obsessed. I would say that. I do think some of the numbers are boring. But that's only my personal perspective, because I like words more than I like numbers, and not everybody does. You know, the numbers are important, and sport is statistical. And when Harry Kane has scored as many goals as Jimmy Greaves, that's a phenomenal thing. But actually, I like that sort of statistic more because those are numbers that relate to people. You can conjure up a picture of Jimmy Greaves. We've all seen the film of him scoring wonderful, wonderful goals for Tottenham and Chelsea and West Ham and England. And then we've got our mental picture of Harry Kane. And that's really personal. And you can sort of see two great, iconic English strikers. And the numbers draw them together. But get me down a conversation about XG, and I'm afraid I'm into Snoresville.
It doesn't help anyone to hear that someone is 26, for example. That was one that a friend of mine who's a commentator always gets really pissed off about. Was that the most average age of a footballer ever?
Yeah.
Tell me, can you think of the most nervous you've ever been to commentate before commentating a game?
Well, I suppose there's always the first of everything. I remember doing my first commentary on local radio back in the very early 90s. And I was frozen to the spot, really. First time on television, I was frozen to the spot. And still now, before any really major event, I pace up and down like a, crazed idiot and mutter to myself and worry about it. You know, Kate, as well as I do, because you're in the broadcasting industry, that we're all only one foot in mouth away from something terrible happening. And so when it's a big day and you know there is an attentive audience, then you're constantly aware. And what are we all driven by in life? Apart from anything else, lots of lovely things we're driven by, but we're all also driven by fear of failure. And I know every time I pick up a microphone, really, the bottom line is that I don't want to foul it up.
You are actually allowed to swear on here, but maybe you won't. You won't want to be repeated swearing around the place, given your voice is your meal ticket. What is your favourite moment that you've commentated on? Has it changed? Because I've heard you say it was from 2010.
No, there still is.
I thought you were going to tell me it might be messy now.
Well, no, you see, that's the thing. I would say now that World Cup final was the greatest game I ever saw.
Right.
Yeah. And how can it not be, really? How can it not be? I mean, that was the ultimate privilege. And it was funny, the World Cup final, I was working with Alan Smith, who's a smashing bloke and a joy to work with and so on. And the funny thing about World Cups is you get to the end of them and you're knackered. And really, at the moment you're supposed to peak, you're thinking, "Oh, when can we go home?" And I said to Alan before that game, what we need here is 2-0, nice and clean, no mistakes, get out. Because, and with 10 minutes to go, it was 2-0. We'd got both the moments right. It was all clean. And I was thinking, we were practically putting away our pens and paper, And then Mbappe has his thing. And whilst those are lovely moments to get, you think, oh, no, that means that we have another half hour where we might get it wrong. But that's terrible. I don't really mean that. Do you know what I mean?
I totally can see it. Yeah,
it churns it up again. And then you hope it goes all right. And gladly it did. The next one might not. But it was a fabulously thrilling game of football. But as an occasion, my favourite does remain the opening game of the 2010 World Cup, just because I think it was so much bigger than football. In fact, given all the issues around the World Cup we've just had, actually, you might argue, and I don't want to get too deep about this, but you might argue that was only football. That was only football, because if you went outside of it, then you go into all sorts of territory that, arguments that have been well rehearsed for the last couple of years. But the South African World Cup was hugely bigger than football. And to turn up at that stadium in Johannesburg in 2010 and see, black and white Africans arm in arm, smiling, having the day of their lives, was so massively symbolic to me, and not just to me. I mean, anybody who saw it, you couldn't help but be affected by it, given the nature of the host country and where it had been and so on. And then for a young kid out of Soweto to score a fairy tale goal like that, that is the moment that puts the hairs up on the back of my neck, because that is what sport can do, that nothing else can do. And I mean nothing else. No, I'll take that back. Maybe music can do that. Maybe music can do that. But sport gave that little boy called Shabalala, a moment that nothing else could offer him. And it meant everything. It was so much more than just a game, that was. Whereas the World Cup final we've just had was a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful game. But it was just a game.
Marquez. Taylor. What do you say? It's a really good ball. It's Shabalala.
Well, you could take that a bit further, couldn't you, given that you were talking about the culture of what it meant in South Africa and then thinking about the culture around what the Qatar World Cup meant. So it's very interesting to hear you talk about the 2010 significance and bringing together South Africa and bringing together, as you put it, you know, this is a goal for all of Africa. It's interesting because what makes football so significant is the culture that it's fostered in. But you can still have, perhaps, I don't know, in fact, I should ask this as more of a question. With that World Cup final, can it still be the greatest final ever in the complicated context that it exists in?
Well, I believe it can, actually. I do believe it can. And please don't for one moment think I minimise the many issues around it. But I think, and I appreciate this is desperately oversimplistic, So take me with a pinch of salt. But in the end, I would prefer to engage and learn and understand and interact than argue, battle, cancel and row. And not everybody would agree with that. But I think at the end of it all, not least because out of sheer good fortune, it was a terrific World Cup. I think we can mark it up as something that shone a light on a few issues that wouldn't otherwise have been shone and provided the world with an opportunity to look at itself.
And so, look, let's talk more about let's talk about players in particular. Let's talk about Lionel Messi, because it seems to me that he is somebody who is... Your commentary is kind of associated with him, which must feel like a bit of a bizarre state of affairs, right? As possibly the greatest player of all time, and you've got so many moments of your voice tied up in there. How has it been to try and communicate that gift that he has on the ball?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't associate myself with him. I'd want to make that absolutely clear. If others do, well, that's very flattering. But it's... actually quite challenging, only because he has so many brilliant moments. And the challenge, again, you'll identify with this as a broadcaster, is to try and find different ways of saying essentially the same thing. I have been lucky because of the Champions League work I've done down the years and so on. I've seen Messi play a lot, and I've been lucky to see some of his most beautiful moments, perhaps the most beautiful of which came, you know, over the last couple of months. And you hear so many others that you're not at and other commentators are dealing with very, very well. And you sort of think, where do we go next? You know, otherwise it just becomes a blur of same old, same old. And you sort of feel that he deserves better than that. that is the challenge. But it's a massively privileged challenge. I mean, who wouldn't give everything for the chance to see Messi play once and to have seen him play and score twice in the World Cup final is an extraordinary thing. And I sort of pinch myself saying, what have I done to deserve that?
Yeah. And it's about summoning up those, because there's a limit to the number of, you don't, I guess, want to be always grasping for like a brand new word in those moments, do you?
No.
A lot of it's about delivery, obviously. But yeah, what are you thinking?
I think delivery, and again, you said it earlier, not me, allowing the occasion to speak for itself. If Messi scores a goal, everybody's loving it. And the best soundtrack is the crowd, actually. Which is why it's lovely as a commentator to get a really distinct goal. And it's why I'm quite glad that that goal he scored that only just crossed the line in the World Cup final didn't turn out. And I know I have this in common with everybody else who commentated on that for television and radio, didn't turn out to be the one. Because, you know, was it, is it, could it, you know? And as a commentator, those are really frustrating moments because you can't give it the kind of bosh, definitive, that's it, Messi, wow, moment, because you're not quite sure it was even in. That was a relief. But, you know, those goals happen. And again, this just underlines how unimportant the commentator is, really. As a commentator, that might be slightly less fulfilling. But it doesn't mean it wasn't a goal. You know, our impact on the game is nil. You can only reflect what's put in front of you.
Do you have a Messi goal that you feel like you really... Can you call to mind one that you feel like you really cracked?
I was very lucky to do a goal he scored in the Champions League for Barcelona against Real Madrid in the Bernabeu. When he danced through from the halfway line and just walked past them and scored an amazing goal in the Champions League. And it was an extraordinary match, or pretty much as dramatic as the World Cup final, actually. And he just scored. It was just a ridiculous goal that I don't think anybody else could score. And from my point of view, I didn't foul it up.
But here's Messi away from 2, 3, 4. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. How good is he? A near supernatural goal from Lionel Messi. He has wriggled and tiptoed his way to the gates of Wembley Stadium. He is just brilliant. Best player in the world, bar none.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
So is there an early moment when you thought, I've got to work in this game?
Like millions of little boys and girls, when I was 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, I commentated on myself scoring against, you know, my brothers in the park. But doesn't everybody do that? You know, I commentated on everything. I didn't grow up in a family that went to football. So I very much, you know, locked myself in my bedroom on a Saturday afternoon and listened to the radio. And then when I was old enough, was allowed to stay up and watch Match of the Day and all of those sorts of things that people of my generation would also say. But I didn't go to matches. So I was really fascinated by the broadcasting as much as I was by the football. I was really into that stuff, but I didn't take it seriously. I didn't even sort of pipe dream about it until I left university, really. And I was a trainee accountant, and I thought, I'll pack it in and chase a dream, and I did. So there you are. I chased a dream, and I've been lucky several times along the way.
And who did you enjoy listening to? Who were your influences?
Well, my influences as a young person were on the radio, chiefly. I mean, the great BBC radio commentators of the day: Peter Jones, Brian Butler, which to the generation after me probably are names that have drifted out of the conversation, but they were beautiful wordsmiths. They had lovely intonation. Peter Jones was a Welsh guy who used the English language gloriously. I mean, gloriously. Was a simply wonderful enabler of the radio listener, you know, to feel as though they were there. He was so evocative. And Brian Butler, who had a gloriously deep voice, as if he'd smoked 10 cigars before coming on air. And he too had a vocabulary to die for. And those were the guys who were at the top of the game when sort of late 70s, early 80s, as I was in that very impressionable stage.
The Welsh have a bit of an advantage, don't they, with their
yeah.
Lovely lilting accents.
They can talk.
In terms of, so we talked a bit about the football, but I'd love to hear more of your kind of, it doesn't even have to be within the context of games you've commentated on necessarily, but things, moments that you've really enjoyed. But within that, where have you really loved to travel to? Is there a particular stadium that you feel like this is it?
Of the big ones, my favourite would be Real Madrid. Just because, again, it's such, well, all sorts of things. It's a wonderfully evocative place. You know, the sense of extraordinariness is great there. You know you're somewhere that really matters. It happens to have a very good position for the commentators. So your perspective on the game is good. So from that pragmatic point of view, it's good too. But anyone who's been there knows that it's like, and I'm not the first person to have coined this phrase, but it's like a wedding cake. You know, it's like more and more white tears going up into the sky, and there's something kind of dreamy and heavenly about it. So I any chance to go there is a joy. But actually, you know, I over the years I've tended to enjoy going to the quirky little places. I love an early round tie in the FA Cup. You know, I remember doing an FA Cup tie when Histon beat Leeds, and I've more recently been to Hampton and Richmond or Braintree Town or whatever, any of these sorts of games where the nature of it is that because television is there, it's for them a big occasion. And as a commentator also, having started this conversation by saying, what's the point of the commentator? Because everybody knows everything about Arsenal and Man United. They don't know everything about Hampton and Richmond. And you've got a story to tell. You've got actually information you can impart. And what's more, at that level, you get to meet the people. You can go and shake hands and look into their eyes and say, hey, what do you do? And, you know, the bloke can say, well, I'm the left back, but, you know, only when I've finished painting someone's house or whatever, you know. And these are real accessible human beings, and sport is best when we remember it's about human beings.
Yeah. Did you what was it like talking about Iceland at the World Cup? I feel like that was a huge kind of people meet the massive stage as well.
You mean Iceland at the Euros?
At the Euros, my bad, of course.
Yeah, no. That was fun, except that of course we were dealing with them beating England, which kind of meant that you couldn't rejoice in them in quite the same way. I was saying to someone the other day that it would have been interesting if one of Morocco's victims at the last World Cup had been England, or whether we'd still feel the same way about them, because I grew to love the Moroccans. I don't know about you. I thought Moroccans were fantastic. And it was a great pleasure because I got to see two or three of their special games. But I love the Iceland story. I thought the Iceland story was fantastic. And it's what's special is that it's a moment in time. You know, I think it's improbable that we'll get Iceland again at that stage, because they're a tiny country who happened to scratch together an 11. You know, the statistical chances of them putting together another 11 that works quite like that, you know, are not good from their perspective. But they had personality, they had humanity. And funnily enough, of course, they had a commentator who made himself inadvertently famous. He went, I think, pretty viral for getting thrilled when Iceland had their moments. And I met him, actually. I went up and said, Coy, you're the man, you know. And he was deeply shy, embarrassed, had no wish to have this profile at all. And, of course, commentating for the most part on Icelandic club football, he'd never known anything like it. But it was from the heart. And he did it beautifully. And I'm sure he looks back on it really happily now. But, yeah, those are – it's fun when it's different. All we ask for, you're the same. All we ask for is a narrative. Yeah. Sport needs a narrative. As long as there's a narrative, it's a great soap opera, and it needs the stories to keep turning over. And, you know, it's in any given game, you sit down before the game and you think, right, what's the story? And when there's an obvious and a, you know, we like extremes. We like the best against the worst. You know, all of that sort of thing. It's hardest when it's in the middle and there's no jeopardy. You know, you need a narrative and you need jeopardy. If there's nothing on it, we might as well all go home.
Well, we're speaking a few weeks ahead of the last 16 of the Champions League. Lots of fans in the UK will associate you with the Champions League these days. And the competition, of course, is going to undergo quite a radical change from 2024-25. So qualification for knockout stages is decided by a league system. There's also going to be a 50% increase in Champions League games. What do you make of that? Where's all the narrative going to be in all of these?
Well, honestly, Kate, I don't know, because I haven't got my head around it yet. That's the honest truth. When the Champions League first came in, at the start of the 1990s, there was a great outcry of this can never be the same again, because back in the day, it used to be the European Cup, which was a knockout competition, not even seeded. So you could get the two biggest clubs in the first round and one would be knocked out by the other. And that was then done for the season. They got to play two games. Of course, it's also huge now that the competition needs, and indeed the clubs themselves need, the guarantee of playing a certain number of home games against premium opposition, because that's how the competition wipes its face. I hope it's going to be okay and that we'll all get used to it. You know, it's not that long ago that if Manchester United played Real Madrid or Liverpool played Juventus or even Manchester City played Paris Saint-Germain, two of the sort of recently rich clubs, it was... wow, this only happens once every 20 years. Well, even now, this happens kind of all the time now. You know, it's part of the pattern of the game. and we seem to be consuming it quite happily. Others might disagree with that. I don't know. It remains the Champions League, a fabulous competition of the best players in Europe and indeed from around the world into Europe. And I hope it'll stay like that. I suspect that it'll take on a similar rhythm to that which we have now, which is that the group stages will happen and they'll have their moments and there might be one or two lovely little underdog stories. But by November, we'll all be saying, well, of course, it doesn't really start till the knockout stage. And then we'll get to the knockout stage and it'll be the knockout stage. And we'll enjoy it in the way we always have. But we'll see.
Makes me think, of course, of the fact that you're thinking about maybe closed systems, the fact that you're a league commentator for NBC. So an American audience who are used to that sort of thing, a slightly different topic of conversation. But have you found you've had to adapt for an American audience?
No, but very easy answer, no, because they don't want us to. I think one of the reasons, long before I had anything to do with it, this is not self-aggrandizement, but one of the reasons NBC has been a success with the American audience is because they set out to give the authentic experience, as it were, to provide the Premier League as the Premier League would be provided in the UK to British viewers. And so they don't want it explained. They don't want to be patronised. They don't want to be told how offside works and they don't want it to be called soccer. They want it to be football as football is. So it was a very easy conversation. Please do it the way you've always done it, because that's what the Americans want to consume.
And before we wrap things up, one of the great nights in recent years was Roma's defeat of Barcelona at the Stadio Olimpico, and your words on that night have become pretty legendary. I know you'll probably deny it because that is your way, but it is true. Can you remember your experience of delivering that moment?
It was one of those nights, Kate, when happily my sort of my planets aligned, because I was very relaxed that night. The fact is that Liverpool, Manchester City was on the other side. And as far as I was concerned, that's what everybody was watching. And I was at the Olympic Stadium, Rome. Messi was playing, funnily enough, that night, not very well. It was impossible for Rome to turn this thing round. And I thought, well, doesn't matter. Go and enjoy it. And so I was prepared, but it certainly wasn't a chore, but it wasn't going to be the night of my life. And it wasn't until Roma had to make up a 3-goal deficit on Barcelona, which just wasn't going to happen. And they scored the first 2 goals. And it was only then that I thought, do you know what? If they happen to score again, this is going to be a thing. And then, bless him, Manolas scored this goal, and the least likely scorer. And people ask about the moment itself. And the truth is that the line, and I'm about to break my own rules by saying it, but I'd be disingenuous not to, because it's been so often quoted back to me, when I said Roma have risen from their ruins, that was a line that fortunately came to mind in the moment, because I hadn't got a clue who scored the goal. It was just a big centre-half who wasn't meant to be scoring, and he got a flick at the near post, and I had to find something to say until a director found him in the crowd of players, and I could see the number on his shirt. And so that goes in. I eventually see who it is. It's Manolas. What did I know about him? He's Greek.
And that's it! Roma have risen from their ruins! Manolas, the Greek god in Rome! The unthinkable unfolds before our eyes! This was not meant to happen. This could not happen. This is happening. Barcelona, extraordinarily, 8 minutes from elimination. And Di Francesco does not know where to go. Iniesta does not know where to look. It is a Greek from Mount Olympus who has come to the Seven Hills of Rome and pulled off a miracle.
Can you tell us about the atmosphere in the place? Or were you just so in your own moment? Or can you feel how it felt?
It felt crazy. It felt absolutely crazy. This was an imp- possibly good night for Roma. It's a very famous football club in one of the world's most famous cities. It's not as if they haven't seen big stuff before, but you know what Italian football support's like. I mean, they are a pretty manic bunch. And this thing that shouldn't have happened, happened. And it was just a remarkable place to be. And coming out of there afterwards, you know, they're all on their Vespas and all of that, zipping up and down the roads and, you know, waving their flags and all of that. And it was a fabulous place to be, actually.
It must have been such an amazing experience. We had a few listener questions that came in as well. Connor on Instagram asked, what's the most fun name to shout during a commentary?
Most fun name?
Yeah, you know.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, some of them are really resonant. You know, back in the day, shouting Shearer was great. Some names just work when you shout them. You know, Shearer! It's one of those ones where you can let the final syllable kind of go on and on and on, if you like. So, oddly, of the great goal scorers, Shearer was one I would pick out. And another that possibly is a slightly dull answer. The most difficult ones are the double-barreled names. Not because they're difficult to say, but because, you know, in the moment, you want something sharp. And if it's Oxlade-Chamberlain, it kind of takes too long to say. Not his fault, by the way. But you know, you want to be moving on from there.
The last one is from Andy Happel. He said, what is the most challenging game that you've had to commentate on and why?
Well, I mean, I could give you a serious answer to this, but the serious answer, funnily enough, would probably be on the day of 9/11.
Wow.
And I remember sitting in my hotel room that day as events were unraveling in New York, and somebody rang me, Jim Rosenthal, actually, who was presenting our show on ITV that night. He said, you need to put the telly on. And I said, I've got the telly on, actually, but I'm watching a video. This is shows the era it was in. I was watching a video of Boa Vista, so I knew the players for the Champions League game at Anfield that night. And he said, turn it off. This is more important than you knowing the Boa Vista players. Anyway, obviously, I saw what happened, and it was a terrible, terrible day for humanity. And they played the game that night. And you sort of didn't know where to go with it. Michael Owen scored a really good goal for Liverpool against Boa Vista. I've spoken to him about it since. And the sense of so what? And you're, in terms of tone, you're stuck between, well, presumably people are consuming this football match and want to be excited by it and sports an escape. And, you know, but on the other hand, pretending that Michael Owen belting one in against Boa Vista kind of mattered on a day that the world was changing. You know, you couldn't square that with yourself, really. So I would say that was perhaps the most awkward one I've ever did. Funnily enough, I worked on West Ham's game in the Europa Conference League in September, an hour after the Queen died. And that was an interesting one, too.
I remember.
There you are. Those are the kind of tonal gear changes that are the most awkward. And sorry to drag the tone down, but there you are. That's the truthful answer to the question.
That's a wonderful answer, Peter, because I think that really sums up the crux of it all, which is that you're trying to place the football in the context of the moment, and you're experiencing the moment and everybody else is, and you're trying to act as some kind of conduit, both for the game and for what's going on out in the real world. So I think it's quite a good thing to end on. Thank you so much for talking to us, Peter. You were absolutely fantastic. It was really, really interesting.
Bless you. Thanks, Kate. Really enjoyed it.
I don't know about you, but I feel as though that whole conversation answers the question so beautifully of what the point is of football commentators. The best of them basically act as not just as a bridge for us, but also as seasoning to the feast of it all. I've met Peter a few times and I was always struck by how modest he is as a guy and as a professional. And I think that's one of the things that plays in so well to his quality as a commentator. He doesn't think of himself as the big guy who's like making the big difference. He just wants to do the job to the best of his ability. And I think that's what gives him such a connection with football fans. I really hope you enjoyed it. Please do remember to get in touch with us to tell us what you thought of today's episode on Twitter at Football Ramble. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at KVL Mason, and I'll speak to you very soon.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.